Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast with me, your host, Francesca. So in today's episode, we're talking about PMDD and how perimenopause impacts it. Now, you may or may not know much about PMDD, which we're going to talk about in a minute. I'll explain what it means. Or you might be somebody who does unfortunately suffer with PMDD. And for you, you're now in perimenopause and you're wondering, or you're moving into it, or you've been in it for ages, and you're just wondering, how might this affect my PMDD? Is there anything I can do? So either way, if we're learning about it for the first time, or you, this really does apply to you, then welcome to the episode. And I do hope this is helpful. So PMDD stands for premenstrual dysphoric disorder. It is a health problem similar to premenstrual syndrome, PMS. We wouldn't call them conditions because they are it's natural. Premenstrual syndrome, essentially, which is refers to a collection of various symptoms that we would experience in a certain phase of the cycle. So specifically just in the week or so leading up to the period known as the luteal phase of the menstrual cycle. So we move into the luteal phase, we ovulate halfway through the cycle, and then we are the next day, we move into the luteal phase, which takes us up to when we start our period, day one of the next cycle. Now we're in the follicular phase again, and so on. So it is natural that we experience a set of symptoms in that sort of week or few days leading up to the period. That's PMS. But, you know, it should be very mild. It should be just mild changes to energy, mild changes to mood, maybe mild changes to appetite and so on. But it shouldn't be anything more serious than that. Anything that is much, much more serious, because PMS itself will have a spectrum. For most, you know, ideally, it should be very, very subtle, but it's normal, but it should just be very subtle. If it's more than subtle, it could be perimenopause, because if you've listened to my previous episodes, you'll understand that the various symptoms of perimenopause are, they're hormone related. So the luteal phase will always be harder than it was in our 20s and 30s. But we can still have situations where we have more severe PMS at any age due to more severe hormonal imbalances. Then we have something even more serious and more severe, which is PMDD. So PMDD is characterized by intense mood swings and other sort of emotional and behavioral symptoms. It can cause severe depression, anxiety, irritability, mood swings, tension, fatigue, difficulty concentrating, and suicidal feelings. So the message here is that PMDD is severe symptoms. So you might think, yeah, I have anxiety, irritability, a bit of depression, mood swings, fatigue. PMDD is so severe that it impacts your relationships, your life, you know, your everything, maybe your work, and so severe that you may have suicidal feelings during this phase, in the lead up to your period. Symptoms usually go away completely a few days after your period starts, or as soon as your period starts. For some women, it goes away as soon as your period starts. And then they start again around 2 weeks before your period. So for some women, they might have it for a week before their period. Some women do have it for the full sort of 2 weeks. In an average cycle, the luteal phase is about 2 weeks. So some women have this PMDD, like flare, you know, rears its head in those 2 weeks. And then when their period starts, or within the first sort of 3 days of their period, they lose all of those symptoms. And they're like, oh, wow, I'm back again. Who was that person for the last week or two? And for some women, some women who have PMDD already, it can get a lot worse as they move into perimenopause and through perimenopause. And some women can have no history of PMDD, but when they move into perimenopause, they can suddenly feel like, actually, this is, you know, my PMS now is really, really intense. And they may wonder, is this PMDD now due to the various sort of hormonal changes in perimenopause that I talk about. So first of all, PMS, you know, just to remember, premenstrual syndrome is not PMDD. PMDD is dysphoric disorder. So the word dysphoric should tell you, you know, it's severe. It's often nicknamed PMS on steroids. I'd argue it's even more than that because it's more severe, far, far, far more severe. In fact, PMDD is actually classified as an endocrinological disorder. So that basically means a hormone disorder because your endocrine system is the body's system of glands and organs that produce hormones. So they're classifying it as an actual disorder. Although both PMS and PMDD resolve once the period arrives, because that is the case that, you know, we experience certain premenstrual symptoms or tension leading up to our period. But once our period comes, it, you know, all alleviates and we feel much better. And that's the same with PMDD. So it's the same, you know, similar sort of presentation timing, I should say. But PMDD is just much more significant, both in length and intensity of those symptoms. There's no test for PMDD or PMS because, you know, then, as I said, PMS is natural. It's natural hormonal fluctuations that are causing certain symptoms. But we do know that hormone fluctuations play a massive role, specifically progesterone and estradiol, which is your main active estrogen produced by the ovaries. When progesterone or estradiol are low in the days and even, as I said, a couple of weeks leading up to your period in that luteal phase, symptoms can start to show and they just become more and more pronounced or intense. The lower those hormones drop, the closer to the period. So after ovulation, we make lots of lovely progesterone, which is what should happen. And then estrogen starts a slow sort of decline. But in the week, at least days leading up to the period, both of those hormones have just left the building. They're getting much lower. But for PMDD sufferers, it can be even more of a drop in that time. And hence why the symptoms are so much more pronounced. PMDD is believed to affect around 3 to 8% of women of reproductive age. So it's a low number of women, but still a lot, obviously, when you extrapolate that across the number of people in the world. So let's have a look at what the symptoms actually are that classify PMDD, because it is something that can be diagnosed, whereas PMS isn't necessarily something you diagnose. Everybody has premenstrual symptoms. PMDD is more, as I said, like a condition, a disorder. So in the UK, there's something called the ICD-10 system, which is used to diagnose mental disorders. In the US, they use the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, known as DSM. So to fulfill a diagnosis of PMDD, a woman should have at least 5 of the following symptoms that I'm going to list out to a marked degree, a very, very significant degree. Over the course of the previous 12 months, before they go in for this diagnosis, occurring in the week or so leading up to their period, and it gets better when their period starts, or at least within the first few days of when their period starts. So note that the word marked is in front of all of these statements. Significant, meaning it's much more significant than the average PMS presentation of these same symptoms. So that's what you'll see. A lot of these symptoms are also present in somebody experiencing PMS, but to a much, much, much lower degree. That does not impact our life as such. PMDD is marked. So remember, every time I mention something, it's to a marked degree. So depressed mood. So that's how we diagnose this, is how a doctor, I should say, would diagnose it, is the person having at least 5 of these things from this list that I'm going to go through now. So significantly depressed mood. So this could be feelings of hopelessness, having very critical thoughts about yourself that are not there usually. During this phase of PMDD, they are just insane, you know, quite intense critical thoughts about yourself. Emotional instability, so mood swings, suddenly feeling very sad or very tearful, or increased sensitivity to rejection. That's quite a big one, rejection sensitivity. Feeling overwhelmed or out of control, feeling irritable, feeling anger, feeling rage, poor concentration or concentration that just sort of goes out the window, extreme tension and anxiety, or like a state of nervous excitement or anxiety, like you're on edge all the time, increased interpersonal conflicts where you aren't usually irritated or angry. Now suddenly you're picking fights with people, you're wanting conflict, maybe with a partner, with kids, with friends, colleagues, and it's actually interfering with those relationships. a loss of interest in usual activities. So social stuff, friends, hobbies, classes you might usually like to go to, like you have zero interest. You do not know who that person was last week that used to go to these things. A change in appetite. So it could be overeating, but you know, we're talking significant. Remember, everything I'm talking about is significant to a marked degree. Overeating of specific foods or specific food cravings, going majorly off piece with your nutrition and healthy lifestyle habits. Hypersomnia or insomnia. So you're either sleeping way too much during this time, you know, can't get enough sleep, or you're just not sleeping at all. Lack of energy, real sense of lethargy and fatigue. And then physical symptoms like breast pain, breast swelling, or just breast tenderness, joint or muscle pain, a sensation of feeling bloated, and weight gain. So again, to reiterate, you may think, yeah, I have those things. It's to a very, very, very significant marked degree is how we classify this as PMDD. So you can see that the first lot of symptoms I mentioned are specifically about the brain and mood. So they're more sort of neurological. And then the last few are more sort of physical systemic symptoms. So before I go on, if you do feel like you're experiencing at least five of these sets of symptoms to a marked degree, then definitely do speak with your doctor about it. You can find these criteria online if you search ICD-10 criteria for PMDD, or you look for the DSM-5 PMDD criteria, which is, like I said, the US version, but it's all the same. And you could have a look at it, print it off, bring it to your doctor and say, look, you know, these are the ones that it's five or more, and it's to a very, very marked degree. And it's for the sort of 1 to 2 weeks leading up to my period. And then it's, you know, it's unbearable and it stops when I come on my period. And this has been happening month after month for the last sort of 12 months. Take that to your doctor. So PMDD is thought to be a GABA receptor issue in the brain, probably lots of other things feeding into it as well. But GABA is a brain chemical, brain hormone or neurotransmitter that has very calming effects in the brain and therefore also for the nervous system. GABA is what our lovely hormone progesterone helps to increase levels of as well. So GABA would support mood, sleep, anxiety, all of the brain-based negative symptoms that I just listed off. So if there's issues with this GABA receptor, because this GABA is basically supposed to bind to receptors in the brain, like those receptors are basically like a docking station on a speaker. So if you were to place your phone on a docking station on a speaker to play music through it, like let's say that docking station, which is the receptor, is thought to be not as flexible as it should be. It's not sort of moving around like it should in order to sort of grab the GABA and allow it to dock. And that can mean that we're just not getting the GABA into our brain like we should. And during that last week or two of the luteal phase, just before the period, when we have progesterone in the system, the breakdown products of progesterone can cross from the bloodstream into the brain and bind to this receptor. Also, another hormone called pregnenolone can bind to it and GABA can bind to it. But as I said, if the docking station just can't move around like it should, it's not flexible like it should be, then we can't get these chemicals, these hormones binding to it. And that can lead to a whole load of these symptoms. Plus, if you have a higher ratio of estrogen to progesterone in that last week or so, which is very common for us perimenopausal women, you know, that we have this high, as we start to ovulate less and less, and we're not actually making progesterone or enough of it, we do genuinely have, for the last 2 weeks before our period comes, we're in a state of where we're in a higher ratio of estrogen to progesterone, also known as estrogen dominance or unopposed estrogen. I've done a whole episode on that. It can create a worsening of some of those symptoms. So if we have that plus this GABA receptor issue, all of these symptoms are going to be more heightened in that person than they would be to someone that doesn't have, let's say, the GABA receptor issue. This higher estrogen to progesterone ratio, or sometimes women can have genuinely too much estrogen in their system, which would be an even higher estrogen to progesterone ratio and even more symptoms. And that can be as a result of maybe they have estrogen clearance issues in the body, their liver and gut aren't breaking down and clearing out estrogen like they should. That can also raise levels of histamine, which can create allergy-like symptoms, but also exacerbate a lot of the brain-related symptoms I've mentioned. So raised histamine can do that. You might even notice random sensitivity to things like alcohol, caffeine, certain foods that you don't normally have reactions to, you know, in the other part of your cycle, but in this last sort of week or two before your period, you're really reacting to any alcohol, any caffeine, certain foods. Maybe you're getting a racing heart from certain foods that you don't normally have apart from in this phase. That's very common. That's a histamine. That can be a histamine reaction. Blood sugar becomes more sensitive to dysregulation in this time too, which can then create issues with mood, cravings, appetite, sleep, feeling hangry, hungry and angry all the time, low energy, weight issues. Resiliency can just feel really low. Stress can feel so much more overwhelming in this time as well. Even such tiny things just feel really hard to deal with. This is all stuff that women tend to experience naturally in this phase of the cycle anyway. And as I've explained before, and it can become more heightened in perimenopause. But as I said, with PMDD, it's just all so much more heightened and almost unbearable. So for all women, but especially those with PMDD, avoiding the things that make it all worse is helpful in this luteal phase of the cycle. So particularly as well, the week before the period and the first few days of bleeding. So avoiding alcohol, avoiding caffeine and other stimulants, avoiding having too much sugar, stick to more quality sugar like dark chocolate, for example, avoid refined carbs, so that's your white flour, carbohydrate products, and even avoiding high histamine foods. You know, you can just Google high histamine foods and there's a lot of foods that contain histamine. So a low histamine diet is pretty much a nightmare. It's not something I would, you know, encourage people to be doing. But if you can just look up the high histamine foods and see which ones you eat most of in that luteal phase and just try to avoid them as much or reduce them at least in that phase, it could be helpful to just reduce those histamine reactions, because if histamine is already higher in that phase and you're also adding to that bucket load with more histamine foods, you know, you're just adding fuel to the fire. Now, conventional GP treatment for PMDD is usually the oral contraceptive pill or an SSRI, an antidepressant, which, you know, can be a lifesaver for someone who just feels like they literally cannot cope. So again, speak to your GP, you know, if you do feel that this does apply to you and you haven't already received a diagnosis, or, you know, maybe you already have. But other ways or natural ways to manage it, which can go alongside these medications, either way, I would definitely, you know, I would argue that these things are essential to consider, just because, you know, why wouldn't you just try everything basically to help manage it? Things that I would suggest to do naturally would be to really evaluate your stress load in the second half of your cycle, put things in place to reduce it at that time as much as possible every month, essentially just to help you manage it better, like be more protective of your time, your headspace, the people that you surround yourself with, the work that you do. If there's anything you can do to sort of, you know, what's the word? I can't think of the word. Just like change up how you do things to help it all feel better in that time. Is there something that you could say, right, this is just not the right time for me to do this particular project. I'll do it next week or the week after when my periods come and I will feel better doing it then. You know, all of that will just take a lot of stress load off your shoulders and then help support those symptoms. What do you need to say no to in that phase, you know, and so on. Avoid or at least reduce your caffeine intake in that luteal phase leading up to your period. Avoid alcohol completely if possible. It's just not worth it and it can make such a difference. So to me, it's a no-brainer. You know, if avoiding alcohol can really change the game for a set of symptoms, I think, why would we not do that? Eat more protein. And if your protein is already optimal, so if it's more than that 100 grams a day, if you've listened to my previous episodes, then great. But just make sure that that doesn't slip and maybe do increase it just a little bit more at each meal during this luteal phase, just to help stabilize blood sugar, just stabilize your hormones a bit better with more protein support. Eat more good fats, so more olive oil, more nuts, more seeds, your pumpkin, sunflower, flax, sesame seeds, you know, good quality nut butters, avocado oil. Yeah, I love extra virgin olive oil, a couple of tablespoons a day, great support. Avocados, coconut oil, coconut milk, coconut cream. So just enjoy a lot more good fats. And we should be doing that anyway, but just making sure we're being more vigilant in this phase. Avoid white flour products, so your refined carbohydrates, avoid sugar, use dark chocolate and nut butters, for example. It's a great treat. I really love dipping squares of dark chocolate into some almond butter. It's so delicious. So utilizing things like that, or, you know, if you want to look for some healthier recipes for various, like maybe banana breads made with flaxseed and dark chocolate chips, for example, can be really helpful. Guard your evening wind down routine. Make more of a point of having quiet, peaceful evenings, doing some gentle yin or restorative yoga poses before bed, listen to some nice music, do some sleep meditations, avoid stressful TV shows. If there's a, you know, a really great TV show that you're watching, but it's like, it's about serial killers, and I love stuff like that. And, you know, I really do. All this kind of stuff that you see on Netflix, like my wife, my killer, and all this stuff. I love it. But there's times in the month I just avoid watching it, you know, particularly before bed, because it's not positive stuff. As much as it's exciting and I enjoy watching it, there's just times in the month it just doesn't work for me. So just being aware of that and thinking, okay, well, what can I watch instead? Maybe it'll be a comedy or just something in the background to uplift you, read a nice book. Just make more of a point of getting into daylight as well soon after waking. Spend more time in nature. Spend much, much more time in nature in your luteal phase, and definitely just before your period. There's research as well on nutrients like magnesium glycinate, which is lovely for calming the nervous system, supporting sleep, supporting mood. Vitamin B6 as well in its active form, which is a form known as P5P. It stands for pyridoxal 5. So if you're looking at B vitamins, you're looking at B6, make sure it is that P5P form. Also a herb known as Vitex, chaste tree, or Agnus castus. It's got three different names. I recommend this to people in the early stages of perimenopause, so sort of early 40s, and I've been using it myself. When ovulation is still very, very possible to achieve every month if we support it, Vitex is one of the things that can support it. Later on in perimenopause, it might not be as helpful, sort of mid to late 40s onwards, but definitely the earlier phases, it can be helpful. But even whatever age you are with PMDD, Vitex has been shown in some women to help in the brain. So it's like, it's a herb. We could call it an adaptogenic herb, which basically means it can help to adapt to your kind of stress levels and give you what you need, and so it can work in the brain basically, which is also one of the reasons it can support ovulation. Vitex can help to reduce a hormone called prolactin, which can worsen PMDD symptoms if it's too high, so definitely something to try. And also in perimenopause, you could speak to your doctor about using body identical progesterone, so not progestins that we would get from the oral contraceptive pill injection or the coil. I'm talking about the body identical progesterone. I think in the UK, the brand is Utrogestan. So you could speak to your GP and ask them if they think that you would be a good fit for that, because that can also help, you know, if you're ovulating less and less, which is what perimenopause is, then, you know, you're missing out on that progesterone, which could, even though you might not, you know, you might have a brain issue in PMDD where you're not actually receiving that progesterone properly, still might just still be helpful to use. So there has been some research in that for PMDD. So as I mentioned, women can tend to notice a worsening in PMDD and also PMS without PMDD when they move into perimenopause, because estrogen fluctuating as crazy as it does in perimenopause impacts the receptors in the brain. They start to get confused. They won't take in, you know, GABA and pregnenolone like they should, which helps to calm. And progesterone is also getting lower and lower, so we're just not getting as much of it anymore to help with those brain symptoms. But some women might feel that they've shifted into PMDD since being in perimenopause. So they're not PMDD, but now that they're in perimenopause, they're like, oh, actually, I'm resonating with all of these symptoms. So again, the hormonal shift here can take some of us from PMS to PMDD, or we might be somebody who's had PMDD our whole kind of cycling years. So again, listen back to the supportive tips and supplements that I listed here and see if you can start to feel better from doing these things. And again, if you do feel that you need to take this information to your GP, you can Google what the kind of list of the set of symptoms that I went through today to see if you know, at least five of those apply to you. So I hope this has been helpful. As always, let me know if you have any questions or maybe you'd like support from me one-to-one. So do get in touch. You can always look at my website to find out more about that. So that's francescaliparotti.com to see how you can work with me, and you can book a free exploratory call with me from there as well. And we can just chat about things before you book in. So thank you for listening, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.